Iceberg calving, or the formation of iceberg, occurs when ice chunks break off larger shelves or glaciers and float away. Eventually, they melt in warming waters or warmer waters. Although this sort of thing, iceberg calving, accounts for roughly half of the mass lost from ice sheet, it isn't reflected currently in any models of how climate change affects the ice sheets, and this lack or interest could lead to additional sea level rise beyond what the current predictions have, according to Dr. Jeremy Bassus, who is an assistant professor of atmospheric, oceanic, and space sciences at the University of Michigan College of Engineering. Dr. Bassus is the lead author of a paper on a new model of iceberg calving and formation that shows that stretches of ice on the coasts of Greenland and Antarctica are in danger of rapidly breaking apart and falling into the sea. He's on the phone with us now to discuss his findings. Dr. Bassus, welcome to the Roadhouse. I wonder if we could start with just some basics about ice and icebergs and so on. Like how much water is there locked up in ice around the world? Where is it located and what forms, etc.?
So that's a good question. There is probably somewhere between 70 to 80 meters of sea level rise equivalent locked up in the frozen
meters?
Ice sheet.
70 to 80 meters?
Meters.
Oh my.
That's right. So it's quite a bit. And we know that in the past, sea level has been much higher, that these big ice sheets have melted, and because they're holding water, that water goes in the ocean, and so the sea level rises. And we know that it's been lower. The ice sheets have been bigger in the past, and that's because they're holding more of the world's fresh water, and so sea level drops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, typically, we don't see big swings of 70 to 80 meters in, say, 10 or 100 years. We're talking about millennial time scale.
Sure.
So what we're really worried about is what's going to happen over the next 100 years or so. So we don't expect 80 meters, but what about a meter or half a meter or 2 meters?
Right.
So that's a question that we've been interested
in. Okay. And this is a great time for studies like yours, with all the attention being given now to climate change and so on. I mean, probably 50 years ago, studying icebergs was not as hip, let's say, as it is right now.
Unless you're on the Titanic, then you might have done better to learn a little bit more about icebergs. So it used to be, when I first started in this field, that we kind of thought that the ice sheets were going to change, but not really over our lifetime. Things would happen really slowly. And we were mostly interested in looking at the ice sheets out of natural curiosity. We wanted to understand what things had happened in the past. And we wanted to understand how, say, changes in iceberg calving or icebergs might affect shipping routes.
Okay.
But what we've seen over the past 10 or 15 years is massive changes that we really didn't anticipate or predict. So to understand some of the things you
such
have to...
Such as what?
To understand what's going on, you have to understand the distinction between two things.
Okay.
One is an ice shelf, which is a floating platform of ice, and the ice is flowing down out from the ice sheet. It gets to the ocean. Ice is buoyant over the water, so it spreads out and it flows. And that's an ice shelf.
Mm-hmm.
The glacier is typically grounded, and so it's flowing, and it's grounded. The bottom is in contact with rock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ice shelves are all over the Antarctic ice sheet, and what we saw, what was noticed in 2002 and then a few times before that, was the Larsen B ice shelf, a part of this ice shelf around, that's on the Antarctic Peninsula, which is around Antarctica. It's a small ice shelf, but the entire thing completely disintegrated over about 6 weeks.
Hmm.
Now, this thing is small by ice shelf standards, but it's still about the size of Rhode Island. So it's a relatively big piece of ice. It just catastrophically disintegrated.
Wow. Yeah. I actually looked at a website that you've got that where you appear on with a photograph of that ice shelf in 2002. And so that was something that hadn't been seen before?
So we had never really witnessed that before.
Mm-hmm.
And where that happened, the Antarctic Peninsula, it's one of the places that has been warming more rapidly than everywhere else. We started to see, and it was reported, you can see in satellite images, all of these pockets of water that started to form on the ice sheet surface.
Hmm.
And the idea is that once you get water on the surface of the ice sheet, if you have a crevasse, some fracture in the ice, the water goes into the crevasse. And then because the water is more dense than ice, It just wants to burrow its way all the way through. And so once you get too much water on the surface of these ice shelves, they just catastrophically explode.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd never seen that before. From sediment records, we know that that ice shelf has probably been stable for more than 10,000 years. So this is an unusual event.
So this led you to the study you've done now, mm-hmm. recently, right? And can you describe in terms that we could understand how, I mean, it's very complicated what you describe about how, what your thinking is that there will be an acceleration of this calving of icebergs.
So we think it's possible.
Mm.
So what our study was really asking was, we know that the iceberg calving events occur, and we know that we have these disintegration type events, like I talked about for the Larsen B, where the ice shelf is there and all of a sudden it disintegrates.
Mm-hmm.
We know that normally what an ice shelf does is every few decades it calves off a big tabular berg. Now, tabular meaning it's really long compared to the ice thickness, so it's stable. And these things are big, like the size of New England State. And they're infrequent, but every once in a while you get one of these big things that breaks off. And then these glaciers that are grounded, that aren't ice shelves, they're better terminated in the ocean, they break off much more frequently, and the bergs are a lot smaller. Again, small being relative. These glaciers are typically 500 meters to a kilometer thick. So think about 5 or 10 football fields high.
Yeah. Wow.
And then all of a sudden, one of these things that might be a few hundred meters wide by 10 football fields will break off.
Mm-hmm.
And then these things catastrophically rotate out, and they hurl pieces of chunks of ice and water all over the place. And it's a really spectacular event.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are really spectacular to watch. So what we were interested in asking is, well, can we understand what causes those three regimes? And that's what we started to look at.
So how did you do that?
And so the model that we made is actually really simple, and it's kind of a caricature of what the ice is really doing. But what we started to think about is that maybe the ice sheets and glaciers near the ocean are kind of like a big pile of blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Think of a sandcastle or maybe Jenga blocks, where you're piling these things up. And the higher it goes, the more stress there is because gravity is pushing it down, and the more unstable it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you pull those blocks away, the more fractured it is, the more crevasses there are, the more unstable it becomes. And so eventually you get really high, and then you pulled off all of these blocks, and so you have this porous structure, and that's when it's really susceptible to massive retreat and iceberg calving.
It's very catastrophic calving.
Catastrophic. I mean, then as soon as you pull off that one last block, and we don't exactly know what will cause that last block, but any kind of pulling that off, flicking it with your finger, then all of a sudden the whole thing disintegrates.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we looked at was, we asked, well, are there any places in Antarctica or Greenland where that looks like it might be the case? And there are a couple. Most places aren't, thankfully. Most places aren't. But there are a couple of places that look suspiciously vulnerable. And again, we don't know how close they are to this Jenga threshold where the whole thing's going to topple
mm-hmm.
out. We don't know how many fractures there are. But we know that there's a couple places around Antarctica where the ice is really thick, close to a kilometer thick, and we know that there's a ton of crevasses in it. And so once that starts retreating, it's also on this bed that's sloping downwards. The ice is getting thicker, and so you'd think more unstable as it would retreat. And so that could potentially lead to a fairly substantial increase in iceberg calving.
Sure.
If that starts to happen.
And this is silly, but of course that's accelerated because of warming of the climate.
So it could be more vulnerable because of a warming climate.
Okay.
Yes, that's true. And so you have two things going on. One is iceberg calving, the other one is melting. And when the ice is in contact with the ocean, it can melt that way, or if the atmosphere is cold enough, then it could melt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could imagine the ice, the ocean melting the ice, and if the glacier is sloping downward, then it's getting thicker as its terminus starts to retreat into this
sure.
deeper portion of the bed. It's going down its deep trough. And so that makes it more vulnerable. And so, yeah, it could be triggered by melting.
And
that's what we think is most likely.
Okay. And you're saying that previously it has been considered that roughly 50% of the loss of ice due to warming or for whatever reason, is from iceberg calving, and that these findings might indicate that it would be more than 50% would be caused by calving. Is that basically what you've decided?
Yeah, so right now, iceberg calving isn't really changing all that much around Antarctica. It's increased a little bit around Greenland, but melting has. It's gotten warmer, so there's more melting. Mm-hmm. And so what we think is that if this keeps on going, then eventually you get to a point where you turn on calving and it gets much bigger, and it could become much bigger than 50%. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So what are the projections now for the next 100 years in terms of sea level rise if present trends continue?
Well, so it's an important thing to distinguish between projections and predictions. So projection mm-hmm. assumes some CO2 emissions, so the temperatures are going to change in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And based on those, the sort of the standard scenarios that we have, most of the models are predicting somewhere between 50 centimeters and a meter or so of sea level. And it's really hard to get a lot more than a meter. It is possible. There's things that we don't understand. And it's really hard to get less than a few tens of centimeters. So we're probably somewhere in that range of 40 to 50 centimeters to a meter or two.
Okay, so that's 1 meter of the 70 to 80 meters potentially
yeah.
there.
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Over the next 100 years or so.
Right, right.
Over the next 200 years, you can get a lot more out.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, of course, that all assumes that nothing is done about the CO2, right?
That assumes, So that assumes that we're mostly on a business-as-usual trajectory.
Yeah, yeah.
And the truth is there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen in terms of CO2, how that will translate exactly to atmospheric temperatures. Unfortunately, because we've been warming for a while now, we're putting some of that heat in the oceans, so the oceans have committed to warming. And so part of that, no matter what we do, is going to cause a change in the ice sheet.
Okay, I see. So the minimum is quite likely, and the maximum prediction is up for grabs.
Yeah.
In other words, the 50 centimeters to a meter, is that what you said there?
I said that depending on whose model or projection you believe,
okay.
There's still some uncertainty about that. It's really hard to get less than a few tens of centimeters, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I think 30 or 40 is kind of the really low end that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And then the high end, depending on what happens, is kind of the order of a meter or two.
Does your study indicate anything about those projections?
So we didn't really look at that.
Okay.
We were really asking a very simple question of could we understand these iceberg calving events? And we tend to be pretty focused on global warming now, but there's kind of interesting, fascinating physics that goes on in terms of what's going on with these iceberg calving events that we also wanted to get at.
Sure.
And so, based on our study, we think that there's some places that are vulnerable, but we haven't really gone through yet and tried to do a better projection in which we ask, well, how big could this be if the mm-hmm. instability that we're pointing could happen actually kicks off.
Do you plan to do something like that, or what's next for you now?
Yes, it's something that we're working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge because we were looking at individual glaciers in fairly simplified settings, and now the question is, can we do it for all of Antarctica and all of Greenland?
Are you speaking of the University of Michigan, or do you have a consortium of scientists that is working on this? How is that done?
On a lot of the models that we do, primarily with my research group that consists of about 3 or 4 graduate students and a few undergrads.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have collaborations with other universities, Ohio State, Los Alamos National Laboratory, and a few other places that can run these big, complicated models. And so one of the really big uncertainties for us and for everybody right now is we know that the ocean is causing the ice to change, but we don't really understand how that's happening. And one of the problems is it's really hard to get any instruments in where the ice and ocean
yeah.
meet, especially when you have these big bergs that are 100 football fields the size of the Empire State Building
yeah.
falling over.
Well, have you been down there and see that calving?
Yeah, I've been to Antarctica. Yeah. I spent a long stint in Antarctica. I have not been to Greenland. Uh-huh. They're pretty spectacular events.
You must get a lot of satellite information and other scientists giving you information on calving, like say in Greenland, for example.
Yeah. So we definitely collaborate with people who are actually out putting instruments down. Satellites have been huge in terms of being able to actually see stuff.
Sure.
During the summer, especially when it's light out, but even in the winter, we can actually get some images and start to actually really look and see how things are changing. So that has been a complete game changer for our field.
I bet.
Having the actual ability to see things from your office rather than having to load all of your equipment to Antarctica for 3 or 4 months or Greenland and then hoping that everything works.
What's going on in Greenland this year, this summer? What's it like?
What's it like in this summer?
Yeah, is there anything, is there accelerating ice loss there as we've experienced in the past, or is it
temporary? Well, we're not seeing, I'm not actually sure right now. I haven't looked at any of the images all that recently, but I think that the story is that most of the glaciers in Greenland that we've been looking at are continuing their retreat as they were. So there's no big acceleration this year compared to last year. There has been a big acceleration over the past 10 years of a lot of glaciers.
Because with the weather we've got here, we've been thinking there might be icebergs floating in Lake Superior. It's been pretty cool. But I realized that was a very unscientific statement. do you have plans for travel to any of the berg areas now?
Right now, no. We're hoping to do some field work within the next year or two, hopefully making it out to Greenland.
Have you had any reaction to the information you've posted about your study?
Have we gotten any reaction? Yeah, we've heard back from a few scientists who are interested in it. There was a blogger associated with National Geographic who wrote a few posts on it and a few other articles and news and print news that I've talked to over the past few days.
Well, we've been talking here with Dr. Jeremy Bassus, who's an assistant professor of atmospheric, oceanic, and space sciences at University of Michigan College of Engineering, has very interesting thoughts and studies on iceberg calving and sea level rise. We've really enjoyed learning something about this from you, Dr. Bassus. Thank you very much for being with us here on the Roadhouse.
Well, thanks for having me on.